we present the only actor to ever hitch a wagon to himself to make himself a star. Mm-hmm. That Mickey Rooney of yesterday, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, before we start, I want to thank you for the many kind letters and wires that came in last week after our first program. It's certainly nice to have you welcome our little gypsy guild back on the air. You've made us all very happy. We are happy, aren't we, everybody?
No!
Yes, you've made us all very...
I'm not happy, Fred.
Who said that?
I did. Jimmy Wallington.
Well, what's wrong, Jimmy? You're not happy. Why, I thought your announcing went over with a bang last week.
Oh, it wasn't my announcing, Fred. I know when I said Texaco products are the best, I was a ball of fire.
I'll say you were. That's not only one man's opinion, yours. That's mine, too. That's two men's opinion.
Thanks, Fred.
I'll say you were a ball of fire, Jimmy. Of course, after you burned out a little, you played it as a clinker, but... The spark was there. Now, why aren't you happy?
Well, do you remember last Wednesday as the show started?
Yeah.
I stepped down to introduce myself.
Yeah?
Yeah, and you cut right in and started the overture.
No, I didn't.
I didn't like that at all. I didn't think it was nice of you a bit.
I didn't start the music, Jimmy. It was Al Goodman in that cheap tuxedo he had on last week. Al began perspiring. The tuxedo coat started shrinking. Al's right sleeve closed in, his arm flew up, and the band started playing. I couldn't help it.
Well, it ruined my reception.
Well, no wonder you're not happy. We'll make it up to you right now. Ladies and gentlemen, could we have an old, used reception for Jimmy Wallington? Could we just... Thank you. Thank you. As of last week, there you are, James. Now, are you happy?
Oh, you bet. I'll be right home, Ma.
He won't either. He's portraying a part there. Now that we're all happy.
Happy, he says.
Who was that?
Me, Al Goodman.
Well, what are you unhappy about?
Last week you talked so long at the end of the show, I had to cut my last number.
You mean when you played We're In the Money, you shortchanged us?
Yeah, I had 2 bars of music left over.
Yeah.
Now I know how Schubert felt with his unfinished symphony.
And Blossom Time, too, you could... Well, no wonder you're unhappy, Al. We'll fix that right away. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Al Goodman will now give you the music he had left over from last week. Carry on, Mr. Goodman.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's it. That makes last week's mediocre show a sensation, Al. Now, that'll be on the hit parade, just that much of it, too. But if anybody can pucker up quick enough to whistle it later on when it catches on. Well, now everybody's happy.
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello, Portland. I hope you're happy about last week's program.
Yes, what do I care what people say?
Portland, didn't you read any of the reviews? Winchell, PM, Alton Cook, Ben Gross?
No, I was so happy, I wasn't taking any chances.
No kidding. Well, fine. Did your mother hear the show?
Oh, Mama couldn't miss it. She made plans.
How do you mean?
When you went off the air last June, Mama left the same station tuned in all summer. She just sat there and waited for you to come on again.
She was tuned into the station we were on last year and heard this program last Wednesday night?
Yes. Mama said when you started joking about Ida and your 5 daughters... She just about died.
Well, I suppose... That about comes under the heading of ad-libbing, doesn't it? I suppose when I sang I love to spend this hour with you, your mother ran amok.
Oh, I'll say. Mama put in her teeth just to whistle.
She did? Well, it was certainly nice of your mother to get out her smirking crockery just for that.
Oh, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, excuse me, Portland. What is it, Kenny?
I want to apologize for last week.
Apologize for what?
For all the laughs I got on the program.
Well, you don't have to apologize.
Go ahead, hit me. I deserve it. I'm a bad boy.
Why should I hit you?
That's what they used to do on the Jell-O program.
The comedian on that program...
Once I got five laughs and he beat my brains out.
Well, why didn't you beat his brains out?
Somebody beat me to it.
Well, that seems to be the consensus. Well, you don't have to worry about provoking mirth on this program, Kenny.
But I'm supposed to be a singer, and last week I got all the laughs.
Well, no, you didn't. I got a lot of laughs.
Oh, you're just saying that to make me feel good.
No, I'm not. I got plenty of laughs last week.
Honor bright?
Honor bright.
Hope to die?
Well, not too often in this...
Well, all right. I don't feel so bad about it now.
Well, fine. Let's just forget the whole thing.
I'll just stick to my singing.
Yes.
If I keep getting all the laughs and singing, too, one of us will have to go, won't one?
Yes. One will.
It won't be you, will it?
No, Kenny, it won't be I.
I get it.
Now, look, Kenny, this program is a happy little family. On our show, no one person is responsible for a laugh.
No?
No, of course not. Now, I'll show you how a laugh works out. Listen.
Yes, sir.
Well, first, there are the gag writers who steal the joke. That's first. Then there is the publicity man, Fizdale, who lets the public know a week in advance through all the papers that the joke is coming. Then the joke is finally told on the program. Jimmy Wallington signals the audience that a joke has been committed. The cast runs up and down the stage making faces. The drummer stands up and drops his trousers, and the laugh follows.
Gosh.
So you see, Kenny... hardly worth waiting for a line like that. So you see, Kenny, you don't have to worry. Last week, you were but a cog in the machinery of mirth. Now, is that clear?
Yes, it's like that old saying, it shouldn't happen to a cog.
Yes, you're perfectly... Now, excuse me, Kenny, come in.
Telegram for Mr. Allen.
Oh, thank you. Here's a nickel for you.
No, thanks. I'm an eccentric millionaire.
Oh, sorry, I didn't recognize you, J.P.
Here's a nickel for you.
Oh, thank you. Say, look, everybody, it's a wire from our sponsor.
Well, what does he say, Fred?
Let me see here. I heard your program last night. Where was the Texaco theme song? I'm listening again tonight. Get it? Gosh, I've got to get a theme song, Jimmy. Where can I get a Texaco theme song in a hurry?
Well, let's see.
If two songwriters don't come through that door, this isn't radio. Come in.
We're two songwriters.
This is radio. And I'll wager that you boys have a Texaco theme song with you.
You are positively psychic, brother.
Get a load of this.
A one, a two.
There are miles you ride by bicycle.
Fine, bicycle. There
are miles you ski in snow.
In the snow.
There are miles you hop along on pogo sticks.
On sticks.
While you're bouncing to and fro.
To and fro.
There are miles you walk for a pack of camels. There are miles you skate on ice like glass.
I'll take it.
But the miles that fill you most with a gladness are the miles using Texaco gas. Fill up your tank.
That little guy has been singing through a Venetian blind. his voice is not only flat, it only comes at you so long. And well, that's done it. Say, Kenny, while we're waiting to scrape that song off the acoustics, will you sing something to sort of clear the atmosphere up?
Okay, how about my Lindy Lou?
Well, if it's all right with her, it's all right with me. Thank you. Thank you. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a surprise guest, a man who plans a startling exhibit at the coming New York Automobile Show. I give you then Mr. Dinwiddie Throb, inventor of the soil-proof windshield. Now, Mr. Throb, just how did you work out this soil-proof windshield?
Well, first, I made a thorough survey of windshields in general.
Yes?
I found that the average windshield is dirty only on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, therefore, in developing my windshield, I put the outside on the inside.
Really?
Eureka, I had it.
Well, it is semi-amazing, but I don't get it.
Well, it's very simple. You see, the outside, which normally gets dirty, is now on the inside, so it stays clean. And the inside, which stays clean, is now on the outside, so it doesn't get dirty. Look for me at the auto show, Mr. Allen.
Well, why should I go down cellar just for that? I'll look for you, Mr. Throb, but I doubt if I'll find you. What do you think, Jimmy?
Well, I don't know, Fred, but here's the man who can tell you what you will find. Larry Elliott.
The New York Automobile Show, opening this Saturday, October 12th, and similar shows throughout the country, will give motorists a close-up of the great 1941 models. And every streamlined beauty will hold out the exciting invitation to drive a completely new car for the first time. To enjoy this...
Thank you. Al Goodman and his men who have a rendezvous with rhythm and have just kept it, have only now completed Begin the Begin. And now you got around to that kind of late, didn't you, Al? It's been out 8 or 9 years, hasn't it, Begin? What are you taking from an old hit parade or something? And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Mr. Allen!
Yes, Portland?
There's a lady here. She says it's very important.
Well, bring her over. It's probably an old fan that's winded.
Mr. Allen, we'll see you, miss.
Thank you, cherub.
Well, I'm very busy, madam. There is something you want?
Yes, Mr. Allen. Will you donate 1 minute to humanity?
1 minute?
Yes. May I use your microphone for just 60 seconds?
Well, why pick on my program?
I've tried all the others. We the People, the Goodwill Court, Hobby Lobby.
And?
It's the same old story. They offer me money, automobiles, and advice, but they won't give me time.
You can't get a minute?
Even Bulova has turned me down. I must have 60 seconds.
At my microphone here?
Yes. I have a message for the world. It is urgent.
Who are you?
I am Madame Lazanga.
Oh. I'll be happy to announce you. Stand by, world. You are about to hear an important message comes to you from Madame Lazanga. Madame Lazanga.
The seventh lesson is ready.
That is all a conjunction. An old butt fell out of the script. That is all, madam.
Yes, thank you. I am off.
Well, you've got plenty of company around here. Portland, lock that door, will you? I've got to get on with our guest.
Oh, is it anybody we know?
Why, certainly is. Who is the most popular comic strip character current in the newspapers today?
I give up.
It's Superman.
You mean our guest tonight is Superman?
No, not Superman. Our guest is the man who we put a traffic cop there so you can get back and forth easier. Our guest is the man who originated Superman, Portland. He has written all of Superman's exploits since this idol of millions made his first public appearance. He's Mr. Jerry Siegel. Good evening, Mr. Siegel.
Good evening, Fred.
So you are the man behind Superman, Mr. Siegel.
No, I'm just one of the men, Fred.
Yeah?
I write the situations and the dialogue. And the strip is drawn by my collaborator, Joe Schuster.
Well, you seem rather young to be the instigator of this highly successful feature, Mr. Siegel. How old are you?
25.
And how long have you and Mr. Schuster been working on your high-voltage Robin Hood?
We started about 8 years ago, but Superman has been in print only the past 2 years.
Well, what caused the delay? Cirrhosis of the batteries?
No, Fred. It took us 6 years to sell Superman. He was turned down by almost every comic editor in the country.
Well, they laughed at Fulton with his steamboat, you know. I guess around your hometown, Superman was known as Siegel's Folly. Tell me, where and when did your strip first appear?
In May 1938, Superman came out in a magazine called Action Comics.
Was he well received?
The strip attracted so much attention that the publishers decided to give Superman his own magazine.
And then his popularity increased by leaps and bounds.
Yes, Fred. Today, Superman is in 218 newspapers, reaching 20 million people. He's in magazines, on the radio, and now he is going to appear in Paramount shorts.
Well, who is Superman really supposed to be, Mr. Siegel? He isn't just old Frank Merriwell with a dynamo in his union suit, is he?
No, Fred. Superman is a super being who came from the planet Krypton. He uses his tremendous powers to fight evil and injustice.
Well, he can do about anything, can't he?
Mm-hmm. Superman can run faster than a bullet travels. He can lift an ocean liner out of the water. Why, he can even stop a train with his bare hands.
Can he open a Pullman window?
Easily.
What a man. Well, I noticed that Superman is always benefiting humanity.
Yes, Fred. He saves people from floods, stops wars, and he's always breaking up crime rings.
Well, fortunately, Superman only exists in your imagination, Mr. Siegel. If he stamped out all of our crime, J. Edgar Hoover would be reduced to playing bits on gangbusters. So how far ahead do you have to write your strips?
I usually keep 3 months in advance.
Oh, you're so afraid of your syndicated Frankenstein?
No, it's Mr. Ellsworth, the editor, and my wife. They get after me.
Why don't you sic Superman on them? It must be a wonderful feeling, Mr. Siegel. 20 million people waiting with bated breath to see if Superman is going to pull up the Holland Tunnel and blow the perisphere through it for a spitball. You are the only man in America who really knows what's going to happen.
I don't feel any different, Fred.
Oh. You're just being modest, Mr. Siegel. After all, you dominate a muscular marvel with a dual personality. When Superman isn't Superman, he's disguised as a reporter, isn't he?
Yes, he's Clark Kent, a meek little chap with glasses.
When Clark has to perform a miracle, he switches to that Superman harness, huh?
That's right. He wears athletic tights and a long cloak.
Well, what I can't figure out is this, Mr. Siegel. Now, how does he change his clothes so fast?
Well, after all, he's Superman, Fred.
I wouldn't care if he was Gypsy Rose Weinstein. Nobody can get into that long underwear ensemble in less than 5 minutes. Now, how does Superman do it?
Well, confidentially, Fred, he wears his outfit under his business suit.
Oh, when he's Clark Kent, he has those streamlined Bal Brigands on underneath, huh?
Right, he's always ready for action.
Well, if he wears woolen underwear all the year round, he sure gets action. Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Siegel. I've certainly enjoyed this opportunity to get the lowdown on Superman.
It's always a pleasure to talk about my protege, Fred.
You know, confidentially, if your jumbo Peter Pan can use a part-time job, I'm going to have a little chore coming up around here about the first of the year. Superman is good at lifting things, isn't he?
Yes, Fred. You want him to pick up something?
My option.
Well, I'm afraid that's the one thing that even Superman can't do.
I get it.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Mr. Jerry Siegel. ladies and gentlemen, from the current Broadway hit show, Louisiana Purchase, we borrow the popular quartet, the Martins, who sing for you now, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. Say, what's this paper? This paper all over the floor. Kenny, did you tear up this driver's license here?
Yep, I'm through driving here in New York.
What's the matter? The finance people get your car?
No, it's those hand signals. Gosh, out in California, I never put out my hand when I was driving, unless I wanted to know if it was raining.
Oh, but here in New York?
I made a turn this morning without sticking out my hand, and you should have heard what a truck driver said.
What did he say?
It wasn't hello.
Or any part of it? Well, I can see. I can see you need some instructions in the hand signal code here, as we know it here in the East, Kenny. Now, I'll give you a quick digest.
Gee, thanks.
Now, the first signal you want to remember is the banana beckon.
The banana beckon?
The banana beckon, well known here in the East. In this signal, the hand is extended laterally with the fingers drooping down like bananas, only not yellow, unless the driver has jaundice, of course.
Well, what does that signal mean, Mr. Allen?
This signal, left turn, also right turn, stop, or back up.
Well, isn't there any signal that just means turn?
Well, that depends on where the driver's going to turn, Kenny. In one of the most important signals, he doesn't use his hands at all. The driver just uses his head.
Uses his head?
That's when he's going to turn into a Texaco dealer station. Am I right, Jimmy?
Absolutely correct, Fred. Motorists really enjoy meeting Texaco dealers. That's because those... This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Roundtable, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. Now, this little session is entirely unrehearsed. Something wrong, Fred?
I was trying to blow. I thought I had bubble gum, and I was trying to... But it wasn't bubble gum.
Well,
I think it's an old piece of glue. I just thought of... whoa when my mouth snapped shut. Well, this is the question of the week, Jimmy, thank you. And yeah. The forum is all assembled here. You don't mind me,
That was you? Quick, you know.
We're
you
a little short.
Fast, yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, you can go ahead and talk, and I'll talk over here. It isn't sanitary, two people using the same mic, you know. But our forum is officially open for the question of the week. Portland, if you'll kindly introduce our first guest.
Yes, Mr. Charles Ernest Wixendale from the Bronx, New York.
Well, you sure you got the name? Thank you. Mr. Wixendale, is that correct?
That's quite correct.
May I ask your profession, what you do in the Bronx, please?
I'm a laundry route salesman.
A laundry route salesman?
That's correct.
With these, your customers applauding. You didn't bring three or four customers down in the truck tonight, did you? Well, what laundry do you work for up in the...
The Fox Square Laundry Company.
Fox Square, is that in the Bronx?
Yes, sir.
I said, do you have a slogan with your company?
Yes.
Does your company have a slogan? Most of them do. There's one up home has a slogan, a wet wash company. Why kill your wife? Let us do your dirty work. does your company have a slogan, Mr. Wixendale?
Our slogan is, we wash everything but the baby.
We wash everything but the baby. It's just as well if somebody accidentally left a baby in a laundry bag and you starched it and sent it back, and the people discovered they had a little stiff in the family at that age. Well, all right. Thank you, Mr. Wixendale. And now, Portland?
Mrs. Josephine Robinson from Jackson Heights, Long Island.
Well, good evening. Thank you. That's Mayor LaGuardia. I guess he hasn't gone home yet. Mrs. Robinson, you live in Jackson Heights, do you?
Yes, I do, Mr. Rollins.
You work over there?
No, I'm a housekeeper.
Oh, a housekeeper? Yes. Well, that's sort of, you're in the same business that Mr. Wixendale is in a remote way. You're doing flat work over there. But how are things over in Jackson Heights?
Well, very nice, Mr. Allen.
They are? Well, I'm certainly pleased to hear that. Well, as you drive out there on Roosevelt Avenue, Jackson Heights reminds me always of neon and neighbors. That's all you can see on the way out. Well, thanks a lot, Mrs. Robinson. It's very nice. It's building up. over there quite a lot. They tell me they're so short on mice that many of the mice are winded running from house to house.
Mr.
Mr. Bill Mullen from Old Orchard Beach, Maine.
Well, good evening, Mr. Mullen.
Hello, Fred.
They, don't tell me you've brought your fans down from Old Orchard Beach, Maine, too. Well, what are you down here for? Trying to get the main exhibit back from the World's Fair people?
Not quite, Fred. Just down enjoying the fair and going to the automobile show Saturday.
You can see the fair from here, really? You're enjoying it? Excuse me, Mr. Mullen. We're a little pressed for time, and I've got to carry on here. But that brings us to, if my head falls down, it will be a weight on my mind. Just lift it up, and I'll carry on. Well, that brings us to our question. And since controversial matters are denied our little catch-as-catch-can board here, we turn to the harmless subject of matrimony. An authority on the subject recently stated that most rifts in the marital lutes can be traced to the husband. This authority said that after marriage, many wives find that their husbands neglect the numerous attentions that were indulged in during the courtship. Flowers, candy, theater tickets are conspicuous by their absence. As husbands, order in the board, please. Husbands abandon these byproducts of romance. And so our question tonight is, do you think a husband should continue to court his wife after marriage? Now, Mr. Wickendall, let us speak as man to man. Do you think the husband should continue to pay those little attentions and carry on with the little niceties after marriage?
I do, sir.
You do?
Yes.
You often show up, come in on the laundry truck at night with a bag of jelly beans.
Yes, sir.
You do? Are you happily married?
Very happily.
Who does your laundry? Well, congratulations, Mr. Wickendall. And now, Mrs. Robinson, what do you think about... This man is distracting me. Go away. So much of him, he can distract you from all angles. But what do you think of the question? Do you think the husband should remain as attentive and shower the wife with gifts in later life?
I certainly think he should, Mr. Allen. I think it helps for a continued married life.
Mm-hmm.
A happily married life.
Well, how long have you been married, may I ask?
23 years.
20? Are you happily married?
I am.
See, you can get applauded for anything on the radio. All right, Mr. Mullen, are you married?
No, Fred, I'm not.
Well, then you're not very well qualified to cope with the question, are you?
No, sir.
Are you courting, are you?
No, but I'm willing.
Well, that brings our little forum to a close. I would say, I feel that we've accomplished practically nothing, and thank you all for your kind cooperation. Kenny Baker.
Yes, Fred?
Do you need
some more comedy?
Oh, excuse me. I'm so tired, I see your lines in my place. Well, not right now, comedy, Kenny. All the names will be synonymous in time. I think about now we can use a song.
All right, would you like to hear Maybe?
Why not? Jimmy, have you got a second to go over these figures with me here?
What figures, Fred?
Well, these things here. There's some statistics my personal research bureau has compiled on last summer's crop of automobile tourists, Jimmy.
I see.
Now, I know that you're an expert on motoring, so we should just listen to these and see if they sound correct. Check on them.
Why, surely, Fred. Sure.
Well, this first one here, during the touring season, the past touring season, mm-hmm. 593 motorists got themselves folded into their own road maps and were never heard from again.
Well, it sounds possible.
That's now the second one here. 7,654 people in trailers stepped out on the back porch while their trailers were in motion and woke up on Route 1 to find the trailers didn't have back porches.
Oh, now, Fred.
And one tourist, just one, Jimmy, had his car washed and didn't run into a dust storm the next day. And how do these figures sound? They gallopy to you? Are they accurate, you think?
Golly, I don't know, Fred. You know, there's only one statistic that I do know about last summer's tourists. And that's this. More of them used fire chiefs
of New Hollywood epics But what about the bad pictures? The celluloid faux pas the public never sees. Now, tonight we preview a picture for you that recently had all Hollywood hushed up. A picture that closed the studio and put 200 executives back in the wholesale garment business. Overture, Al. This is the story of a Hollywood flop. Instead of screen credit, screen blame goes to the following persons. The genius who started the ball rolling.
I am Simeon Fink, the Hollywood producer. A Warner Brothers picture, The Seahawk, made a fortune, so I said to myself, with a sequel to The Seahawk, I will be a millionaire.
And today, Mr. Fink?
I'm a bum.
With a capital B?
With no capital at all.
Thank you. Before Mr. Fink could go into production, naturally, he had to have a story written. Well, sir, he called in the authors, Briskin, Braskin, and Bruskin.
I am Briskin. I stole the story.
I am Braskin. I stole the dialogue.
I am Bruskin. I stole the credit.
I'm Shakespeare. Was I robbed?
The story, Bill, you laid an egg. The story ready. The story ready. The studio swung into action. They called in...
I am Duval Duval, the director. I called the sequel to The Seahawk, The Sea Buzzard.
Are you still directing, Mr. Duval?
Yes, I am directing traffic in North Hollywood.
The star of the picture was...
I am Horace Snide. I played the male lead in The Sea Buzzard. Everyone in Hollywood said I would go a long way.
And did you?
Yes, I am now living in Bayonne, New Jersey.
When The Sea Buzzard was finished, it was previewed. One man said...
I saw The Sea Buzzard. I refuse to give it one bell.
Oh, are you a critic?
No, a good humor man.
There was only one other person involved in this celluloid catastrophe.
Yes, I am the ghost of Gideon Levy. I loan Fink $1 million to produce The Sea Buzzard.
Whatever became of you, Gideon Levy?
I saw the picture. Better death than dishonor.
Where are you speaking from?
Dante sends his regards.
There you... Well, it's all inferno. There you have the story. There you have the story of The Sea Buzzard. The sequel to The Seahawk, ladies and gentlemen. A picture Hollywood hasn't dared to mention. We preview it for you here tonight. The story takes place in the year 1540 A.D. The pirate ship, the Sea Buzzard, is homeward bound on the high seas.
Ahoy, boatswain!
Ahoy, Captain Pollock!
Full sail ahead!
Full sail ahead it is, sir!
Luff the mizzenmast!
Luff the mizzenmast it is, sir!
Reef the halyard!
Reef the halyard it is, sir!
Vorpal the Crowfnay!
Vorpal the Crowfnay it is, sir!
I caught you that time, Rose. That was marine double talk.
Sorry, Captain. I'm Vorpal the Crowfnay.
Hi, Boatswain. I'm going after my cabin. I've got to stuff up a knothole in the ship's log. Sailing, sailing, sailing over the bounding foam. My stomach's going up and down. I should have left it home. Ahoy, Pigley. Where's that first mate of mine? Pigley.
Here I am, Captain. I was standing watch.
Did sight any Spanish ships on deck?
Nearly a one, Captain.
Sounds. Here I am, Captain Thorpe, master of the Sea Buzzard. The toughest pirate that ever plundered the Spanish main.
Oh, I see.
100 days in these waters.
Aye, and you've only plundered one ship.
Aye, and that a leaky herring trawler, the SS Lindes.
Well, look here. Why do we only go after Spanish ships, Captain?
Queen's orders, Pigleg. Spanish boats is carrying a succulent route to the New World. It must be a priceless growth. The Queen demands her cargo or this pungent herb.
What's it called, Captain?
Tis an odd name, Pigleg. The Spanish onion.
The Spanish onion? Blimey.
This may be news that a galleon has been sighted. Door away!
Hiya, Captain.
Fobbs, my lookout. Why ain't you up in the crow's nest or looking for prey?
Why, I came down to tell you...
To tell me what, Nee?
There's a Spanish boat.
A Spanish craft? Quick, rogue, where is it?
It's over to the starboard, the stupor. It's on the starboard, but it's gone.
That's the 87 Spanish prize I've lost, Pigley. By the time that lookout says... For Spanish, they're out of sight.
Well, look here, why don't you sack that lookout, Captain?
I can't. The nudnik is a nephew of Queen Guinevere's. He come aboard with a letter from the Queen recommending him for lookout.
I say, look, sir, out the portal.
Sounds, the ship.
Roger.
I'll hail her.
Roger.
Ahoy there. What ship are you?
Ahoy there. What ship are you?
I asked you first.
I won't tell you who's this till you tell me who's that.
I'm the Sea Buzzard out of San Ynador, heading for Newport. Who are you?
The Albany Night Boat out of 14th Street, heading for Yonkers.
That fool is in the wrong direction, the wrong ocean, and the wrong century.
Blimey, another one got away. You'll never get them Spanish onions for the Queen.
Why, matey, I can't trust that stuttering lookout. I'll stand watch myself. Get me my binoculars.
Oh, sir, they're in the closet, in the locker here.
Open it up.
Blimey, there's a bloke in your locker, a stowaway.
Well, I'll be blowed. Who are you, mate?
I'm Kenny Baker.
What are you doing aboard?
Last Sunday, Dennis Day said I had a yacht, and this is it. Would you mind closing the door?
Why?
I think I'm going to be seasick.
Your word is good enough for me.
Shall I root him out, Captain?
No, matey, leave him be. There comes a time in every tenor's life when he can't handle a high sea. Very good. Who's that, Gabriel?
Now, look, Captain, the royal barge approaches. It's the Queen herself on deck.
She must have sailed out to find me in the quest of them Spanish onions.
Her Majesty is coming down the gangplank. Her Majesty is approaching your cabin.
Let Her Royal Highness in, Pegleg.
Aye, sir.
Greetings, your Majesty.
Greetings, Gate. I arrive in state.
Aye, your Majesty.
You have carried out your Queen's command.
I have plundered the seven seas, your Highness. In this chest here are Aztec trinkets of the purest gold, Nubian gems, Portuguese tapestries, and these strangely inscribed buttons I picked up off the coast of Maine.
And what says this quaint inscription?
Win with Landon. An old native battle cry, no doubt. These are indeed treasures rare.
What care I for treasures? Where are the Spanish roots I commanded you to fetch? Where are my onions?
Alas, I have known, your Majesty.
No onions for your queen? You shall pay for this treachery with your head. The guillotine.
Queen Guinevere, not the guillotine.
Yes, the guillotine. The Gillette that follows through.
If I caught no Spanish ships, your Highness, the blame is yours.
Mine, you rancid guppy.
Aye. Your stuttering nephew you sent aboard was my lookout.
My nephew I sent aboard?
Aye.
A shot, what was that?
Swab, Miss Guppers, I'll soon find out.
Here, get me, man.
Bob, me lookout. The Queen's nephew.
This lumpkin is not my nephew.
What?
I just caught him in time, sir. He was about to commit suicide.
Yes, let me go. I'm going to kill myself.
Hold on, Forbes. Why, you ain't a stuttering.
No.
Your stuttering was a ruse.
Yes.
You let them Spanish ships get away for purpose.
Yes, I did it. I did it. Queen or no queen, I was determined she shouldn't have those onions.
Why, this is vitamin sabotage.
I knew why you wanted those Spanish onions, Your Majesty. You were tired of eating hamburger the old way. You had heard of a new way to cook this irksome ground meat with onions.
Yeah, a knight from the White Tower told me.
I knew once Your Majesty ate hamburger with onions, it would be the rage. Once the world knew about hamburger with onions, I would be through, bankrupt, out of business.
Then you are not simple Archie Forbes, yeoman lookout third class.
No.
Who are you, lout?
I am Sir Lindsay Lazenby, the Piccalilli Baron.
The Piccalilli Baron?
Yes. You see, I had no choice.
He's right, Your Highness. Once the world is tasted a hamburger with onions, Piccalilli will be through.
Aye, and I vowed that day would never come.
Well, you've kept the onion from me, but you can't keep it from the wild. Centuries hence, all mankind will eat the onion.
Aye, and in every land, it'll be the breath of a nation.
When you operate the nation's fastest...
Next Wednesday night, the Texaco Star Theater brings you Your Song of the Week.
I got my thrill on Raspberry Hill, on Raspberry Hill.
Wait a minute. That's Blueberry Hill, not Raspberry, isn't it?
When I sing, I don't get the blueberry, brother.
And our guest will be...
Mr. Ernest Peabody, president of the Anti-Noise League. Is New York the noisiest city in the country? Will noise be noise? Tune in next Wednesday. Find out.
Thank you, and music. Thank you, good night.